The Ho'opono Story, covering the years 1994 through 2009, An Administrator Remembers, by David Eveland, read by Tom Hudson.
This book contains 42 pages, approximate reading time, 1 hour, 40 minutes.
Whatever you can do or dream, you can begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Johann W. V. Goethe. The next to last day of an 8-day raft trip down the Colorado found the Ho'opono group, also referred to throughout this write-up as Program Agency Branch, made up of 9 blind youth and an equal mix of 6-sighted and blind adults, navigating their way on foot along a shale shelf by the river for a few hundred meters before coming upon a laid-in rope which made the going up a steep rock face manageable. After that, the group came upon a vertical 10-foot rope ladder, which led to the flat, where was found an idyllic waterfall unseen from the river below. All members of the party enjoyed immensely the power of the water raining down on their heads. All members were glad to be where they were and proud of their journey. Reaching the falls was one of many highlights of what had proven to be a fun-filled and confidence-building week. How this trip came about is, in fact, due to the story of how Ho'opono, Hawaii's Vocational Rehabilitation Services for the Blind branch, had evolved. Ho'opono has a rich heritage which has stood the agency well since its founding. The organization's history is alive. Past events are the key to understanding the branch's present and furnish hope for its future. Dr. Elizabeth Morrison, who led the agency through great changes as Hawaii transitioned from territory to statehood, wrote an excellent history which covers that and earlier periods. The account she wrote is titled Little Coconuts and begins with the 1935 founding of Hawaii's Bureau of Site Conservation and includes the numerous developments which led to the creation of the Ho'opono Center in 1962. Along the way, Little Coconuts provides detailed information as to the establishment and growth of the business enterprise, rehabilitation training, low vision clinic, education and outreach, and workshop programs. Dr. Morrison was a true pioneer in the field of blindness rehabilitation, and it is evident her contributions and those of successors B. Higuchi, Jane Ige, and Jan Tavares live on through the many services the agency provides. Community Services Coordinator John Koki followed up on Little Coconuts with an enlightening history of the agency that can be found on the Department of Human Services website. John covers the early statehood area, the medical model phase from 1963 to 2001, and the implementation of a rehabilitation-focused model at the start of New Visions in 2002. The accounts provided by Dr. Morrison and Mr. Koki are excellent. The purpose of the program to provide meaningful services that result in employment and/or the ability to live as independently as possible is well-defined. The structure of the agency, including its administrative, counseling, employment, and adjustment center units, is described. The various programs are detailed. This current account covers the years from 1994 through 2009 and aims to provide some insight into most of the significant events and changes which occurred. During this era, members of the local and national blind community, consultants, parent VR, and other agency personnel made invaluable contributions. Whatever accomplishments or success that is described in this narrative was due in no small part to their support. Of course, nothing would have been achieved at all if not for the wholehearted efforts of the Ho'opono staff. Not enough good words can be said about their commitment, dedication, and passion to serve. Challenges. I started as a rehabilitation counselor with Hawaii VR in 1975 and became administrator of the Services for the Blind branch in April of 1994. During my first 2 weeks at Ho'opono, a simultaneous strike of both the support and professional employee union units happened. Within the first 2 months on the job, the building alarm service called home in the middle of the night numerous times. Full-page ads in the local newspaper stirred up community residents to complain about the airport vending situation. The neighborhood became incensed over the handy van issue, and the neighborhood board publicly chastised me. yikes, could not help but wonder what in the world I had stepped into. Thankfully, Betty Lee, my wife, would not let me wonder too much. Deaf Blind Project. The early to mid-1990s found Ho'oponopono at the forefront of efforts for Hawaii VR to improve services for deaf and blind state residents. A grant was received to establish a deaf-blind register, task force, and fund positions to serve this population. The decision was made for the positions to be housed at the Ho'oponopono Center. By 1994, 10 deaf-blind participants were regularly attending the bachelor site, and most all were accompanied by personal service attendants. Tremendous gains were realized by some of the participants. A young woman who had been institutionalized obtained sheltered workshop status. Many others aspired to reach the same goal. The Helen Keller National Training Center provided ongoing training and consultation on site as well as at their Long Island campus. There were concerns, however, about Ho'oponopono being at the forefront. Consumers who did not fit in the deaf-blind category were, for the most part, avoiding attending center-based instruction. Rehabilitation center instructors faced innumerable challenges meeting objectives and goals for individual participants. Many of the deaf-blind participants had additional disabilities, which made the ability to learn the skills of blindness seem at times impossible. Some of the staff felt they were no more than caretakers, with their primary purpose being to provide something for their participants to do so that they could get out of their care or family home situations. Participant outbursts occurred on occasion, and property furnishings were damaged. One participant knocked a toilet off its foundation during a tantrum. Others were biters and scratchers. Strict cleaning protocols of participant messes were put in place, and instructional staff got hepatitis B shots. The Helen Keller staff sensed that the agency was at a crossroads and recommended that a decision be made as to the type of program the center was going to primarily provide. Shortly afterwards, it was determined that the center would focus on its mission to provide services to those with the ability to make satisfactory progress within a reasonable amount of time towards reaching their rehabilitation objectives and goal. A plan was developed detailing what constituted as reasonable progress and shared with community partners, including the Department of Health and participant family members. Opposition arose. DOH social workers objected in public meetings with members of participant families present. I was likened to Adolf Hitler by an upset meeting participant. Although some staff appreciated the effort to more clearly define the agency's role, other staff was not pleased. Those that weren't felt the agency was turning their back on the deaf-blind population, and that without Ho'oponopono involvement, their participants would end spending the rest of their lives in care homes or worse. A temporary restraining order was issued to halt plan implementation. The chief of the overall vocational rehabilitation agency met with his counterpart in the Department of Health. The social workers cooperated. Although the social workers for months had said no other placements were available for their clients, as it became clear that they were not making progress, spots in appropriate day programs were found. The center returned to its core purpose of providing services and programs to assist participants to obtain employment and/or to live as independently as possible. VR participants designated as belonging to the deaf-blind category were given a choice whether to be primarily served by the Services for the Blind branch or by Oahu Branch Deaf Section. Handyvan. The Ho'oponopono building is situated next to the Ho'oponopono Annex, which is rented by Lanakila Incorporated, a community rehabilitation provider. Lanakila serves a population of 300 and more daily, half or more of whom rely upon the county's paratransit program known as Handyvan to get to and from their residences. Handyvan's fleet consists mostly of 12 passenger-sized modified vehicles. Passengers are dropped off and picked up on the curb in front of the Ho'oponopono buildings. The lower section of Bachelet Street is a mixed-use area comprised of medical and rehabilitation facilities. Indeed, community planners once envisioned the middle Liliha Nu'u'anu corridor as a hub for medical facilities. Today there exists 3 major hospitals, a convalescent center, and several medical office buildings within a 3-block radius from Ho'opono. Bachelot originally terminated at Bates and was extended in part to accommodate future access to planned facilities. As the years went on, the Lanakila Ho'opono programs and handy van services grew concurrently to the point that during drop-off and pickup times, neighborhood residents became more and more inconvenienced by vans going up and down narrow Bachelot Street. The vans are large and block drivers' views, whether moving or parked, on the curb. At times, as many as 13 vans could be found parked alongside the curb of the Ho'opono buildings. There were so many complaints being made to the city and state officials by neighborhood residents that in May 1994, State Representative Suzanne Chun Oakland, at that time she was not yet a state senator, scheduled a town hall meeting on the subject, which was held in the Ho'opono Auditorium. The meeting was raucous, with some community members openly venting their anger towards Ho'opono for allowing the situation to get, in their view, out of hand. The result of the meeting was the formation of a task force to be made up of Lanakila, Ho'opono, and Handyvan employees to develop a plan to solve the problem. Ho'opono was charged to report on the progress of the task force to the neighborhood board officials during their scheduled monthly meetings. The task force started meeting on a weekly basis and brainstormed several ideas to alleviate traffic. Proposals that were presented during the town hall meeting and via phone calls and letters were also considered. A proposal to have the vans enter the parking lot and exit out the lower Lanakila entrance with drawings was studied. It was deemed not feasible due to the lack of space. The vans would have to pass delivery trucks while exiting out the back side. Another proposal to have the vans drop and turn around in the Ho'opono lot was deemed not possible due to the loss of parking lot spaces. Such a plan would necessitate, and the reality that vans would need to reverse in the lot. Handy van drivers, as a result of their size and lack of driver visibility, are not supposed to reverse their vehicles. The first steps involved assessing the situation and getting an accurate account as to how many vans were parked alongside the curb at any one time. Goals were set to reduce the number of vans parked to no more than 7 at a time. Handy van assigned a monitor to ensure that drivers did not linger at curbside. Lanakila and Ho'opono assigned staff to assist passenger expediency during drop-off and pickup times. The handy van dispatch officer worked on maximizing riders per vehicle and route streamlining. It was discovered that part of the problem with the curb crowding involved drivers waiting on Bachelot Street to go pick up passengers from other nearby medical facilities. Handy van instructed its drivers to discontinue that practice. Lanakila agreed to stagger the start and end time for its clientele that rode the handy van. Ho'opono did the same. To demonstrate concern for the situation, Ho'opono representation attended 6 consecutive neighborhood board meetings. The first couple of meetings, the reception from the board was not pleasant. Board members sat behind folding tables set up on the stage of an elementary school auditorium. The effect was that of a courtroom, with questions steered at those giving reports as if they were defendants. During one of the first meetings dealing with the parking situation, a board member, after hearing complaints from the audience, said that this was my problem and that I needed to get it cleaned up pronto. The scolding, though uncomfortable, did bolster determination for the task force to improve the handy van problem, and the situation did get better. The reception at the neighborhood meetings warmed, and by the 6th month, there was no evident need for further participation in neighborhood board meetings. The board focused on other issues, such as increased home burglaries and noisy church singing. The task force continued to meet regularly for a couple of years to ensure that the practices put in place would continue to mitigate the handy van situation. Workshop. State statutes establish the authority for Ho'opono to operate a work training facility for blind employees to earn wages commensurate with their work output. The Javits-Wagner-O'Day Act is the federal impetus for what became known around the nation as blind workshops. Hawaii was no different from many states whose identity was wrapped up with its sheltered workshop. For Ho'opono, initially, that meant primarily the production of brooms and later mops. The Ho'opono building blueprint called for most of the entire ground floor to be allocated for workshop purposes. Shortly after the move was made to the Bachelot site, there were 40 people employed by the shop. Their earnings were determined via time trials, which compared production to standards in private enterprise. Standards were established for the production workshop trainees would need to reach to obtain workshop employee status. Once employee status was obtained, an employee was eligible for health insurance, vacation, and sick leave benefits. Mechanisms were put in place for employees to become unit supervisors, and several earned incomes equal to or more than minimum wage. For many years, the workshop was a viable business operation. Through close relations with other National Industries for the Blind agencies, military wholesale became a substantial part of the workshop program. Broom production, having been phased out, was replaced primarily by the sewing of items such as safety vests, mop production, and the finishing of products shipped by other NIB agencies. The military resale products after completion or warehousing would then be delivered to military outlets. The workshop also had a day activity component, which allowed some individuals whom could not reach sheltered worker status to engage in work activity. The day activity component afforded extra income and social engagement opportunities. As minimum wage increased along with the number of employees earning higher wages, it became increasingly more difficult for the workshop to make ends meet. The shop operated under a revolving fund account, which meant it had to meet its payroll and inventory expenses. Despite the state providing free space, a workshop foreman, a manager, and an account clerk, it kept getting more and more difficult each passing year to earn a profit. The 1998 amendments to the Rehabilitation Act and an RSA directive clarified that workshop closures could no longer be considered as successful employment outcomes for VR purposes. This action meant that not as much VR funds would be available for workshop trainees to become workshop employees. The amendments placed emphasis on participants earning regular wages and to do so in integrated settings. At a meeting with the local Center for Independent Living, its director pointed out that the operation of the Ho'opono workshop was incongruous with the Rehabilitation Act. This fact, along with the decreasing shop revenues and subsequent less work hours for shop employees, led the branch to start seriously considering the phasing out of the workshop. This action was not undertaken lightly. A senior staff person said that if anything ever happened negatively to the shop, then the whole agency might well disband. Her statement illustrates that much of the agency identity had for years been tied into the workshop. The problem that went along with such thinking, though, was that many people ended up staying at the workshop for several years, or even a whole career, instead of earning much more money in community-based integrated employment settings. That this is a fact can be illustrated in the case of a young woman, 40 years ago, being shuffled directly to the workshop instead of exploring other vocational options. Fortunately, that young woman wanted something more and eventually, with the agency's help, got her degree and went on to have an outstanding career in government service. She came out all right, but so many others never got out of our workshop, or ones similar to it around the nation. So, ultimately, the decision was made to pursue getting out of the workshop business. The workshop positions sponsored by the state were redescribed to support the BEP and New Visions programs. Attempts to find an NIB agency to take over were made. There were inquiries, but no offers. Discussions were then undertaken with the CEO of Lanikila. She and the Lanikila board liked the idea of adding a blind workshop on their campus. Lanikila obtained National Industries for the Blind certification and made an agreement with SBB for all of the workshop employees to transfer to their operations. They took over the military wholesale program and hired a blind person to manage the NIB portion of their business. Initially, the program did as well, if not better, than it had under Ho'opono. However, as time went on, it became more and more difficult for the NIB phase of Lanikila's program to keep going. The CEO of Lanaquila left. Her replacement said that he did not know how in the world the decision had been made for Lanaquila to take over the workshop. Lanaquila decided to get out of the blind workshop business. Fortunately, by then, many of the former long-term Ho'opono workshop employees had reached retirement age. The ones that remained were phased into the regular Lanaquila operations. Team building. In the spring of 1994, staff had been without a permanent administrator for half a year. There were mixed sentiments as regards the deaf-blind project. A two-week strike called by the employee unions, although rallying the troops for a while, had left some scars. Some staff were upset that they had to turn in their building keys prior to the walkout. Several staff noted it would be good if there could exist more trust between the counseling, adjustment, and employment sections and with the administration unit. Some of the counseling staff felt that the adjustment section program should be doing a better job of enabling its participants to obtain suitable gainful employment. No matter that several of their referrals, in addition to lack of activities of daily living capability, also had severe cognitive, speech, and behavioral issues. To assist with conflict resolution, Department of Education mediators got involved by developing a mediation program to afford branch staff an avenue for more open communication. The information gleaned about the process was helpful, but the mediation plan itself did not have much of an impact. For more sustained team building, it was recommended that the branch contact Elan Enterprises and enter into a formal multi-session contract with them. Elan, headed by Trinidad Hunt, provided 12 sessions for all staff over an extended period of time. Homework was required for each person to do prior to the next session. An example of such was readings and the pairing up of people from different units to work on projects and get to know each other better. Synopsis of each Elan training session were written up and distributed within 1 or 2 days. Supervisors were responsible to discuss training and to foster a supportive work environment. Work groups were formed to review suggestion box recommendations and to clarify the branch mission and goals. Morale improved, in part due to the training and also due to the phase-out of the deaf-blind project. One of the main lessons learned and experienced from Elan was that people want to do great. People want to make a difference. This lesson was reinforced many times over in the years after Elan ended. That knowledge learned aided staff to persevere as significant changes were later undertaken. During one of his early visits, consultant Dr. Fred Schroeder was asked his thoughts on improving branch morale. His response was that morale would be high once staff believed they were truly making a difference in the lives of consumers. He spoke the truth. Opportunities. The law and regulations enabled Ho'opono to provide a variety of programs and services. Here are described two components that underwent significant change. OIB. The Independent Living for Older Individuals Whom Are Blind program became a formal, integral part of the Ho'opono program when Hawaii was awarded a discretionary grant from the DOE. SBB had for decades provided home rehabilitation teaching through the allocation of a rehabilitation teacher position to deliver services in people's homes. The grant provided additional funds which enabled the program to subcontract to Hawaii's Center for Independent Living, whom in turn hired 5 staff to carry out a statewide program. In 1998, Congress established the OIB program as a formula grant, which meant states no longer had to compete for funds, and that the program would continue for the foreseeable future. The purpose of the OIB program is to provide independent living services to individuals age 55 and older who are blind, so that they could live as independently as possible. The program typically serves 200 to 300 each year. DOE's Rehabilitation Services Administration, RSA, provided training and monitoring of each state's OIB activities. As the program moved from a discretionary to a formula one, RSA started placing additional emphasis on the provision of services to new consumers. This prompted an in-depth review of the number of new people served each year by HCIL. The study showed that Ho'opono's lone rehabilitation teacher was serving as many, if not more, new referrals each year than all of the HCIL program staff combined. It had also become apparent that HCIL experienced a high turnover rate among teachers hired, some of whom were physically unable to provide services inside participants' homes, and others who lacked basic understanding or knowledge of blindness rehabilitation skills. The surveys also showed that the main services HCIL provided consisted of handing out free aids and devices such as talking watches and white canes. For the teaching of blindness skills, HCIL participants had to be referred back to Ho'opono for services. Given these factors, and the fact that with the onset of formula funding, the OIB program was here to stay, efforts were put in place for Ho'opono to hire its own statewide rehabilitation teaching staff. A bill was introduced during the 2000 state legislative session by the Hawaii chapter of the National Federation of the Blind for the authority to add 4 additional rehabilitation teacher positions to be placed around the state. Prior to the bill's introduction, meetings were held with HCIL staff and each island's consumer group attached to HCIL. The HCIL director understood the reasons to have the program run directly by Ho'opono and thanked the program for years of subcontracting with them. The meetings with the consumer groups initially were smooth. The bill was passed and signed, and about a year later, recruitment was begun. A plan for the transitioning of the delivery of program services from HCIL to SBB was developed and shared with the various stakeholder groups. Basically, the plan called for a 6-month phase-out after the hire of each island's rehabilitation teacher. There was enough funding to follow this format because when the program moved from the discretionary to the formula phase, an extra year's funding was received. Assurance was given to current consumers that they would continue to receive services. However, some of them felt they were being abandoned. These concerns faded for a while, and the transition was going as good as could be expected. After another year, a new director was appointed at HCIL and also at the Department of Human Services. Some of the consumers decided it was a good time to try and get HCIL once again involved with the operations of the OIB. The department made inquiries as to the possibility of sharing the RSA pot of funds with HCIL. As they were part of the new state governor's administration, they wanted to manage complaints as much as possible. The response was that there was just not enough to go around. The newly hired HCIL director expressed concerns about OIB management. Complaints were made to legislators, and 2 informal legislative hearings were held on the OIB and other programs in spring of 2004. The hearings were of benefit to both consumers and program, and more is said about them under the new visions section of this history. The annual reports provided to RSA showed that although the OIB program under SBB was not consistently providing services to more people than it did when subcontracting out, they were serving substantially a greater number of new referrals each year. The hiring of teachers directly supervised by SBB ensured that staff would obtain extensive alternative skills training and would be able to, in turn, teach those skills to consumers. More group teaching occurred for consumers on their islands and at senior camps for people from each island to attend. Reviews showed that the quality of services provided was much higher than before. The original intent when the OIB became a formula program was for those states in the minimum funding category, such as Hawaii, to receive a significant financial bump upon renewal of the Rehabilitation Act. This did not happen, however, because the Act was not amended on its 5-year schedule as it had been for decades, and is, as of this writing, now over 10 years past due. Larger states have seen increased funding, but Hawaii has remained at the same level for over a decade. This meant by 2010, there would no longer be enough funds to pay for the 4 teachers and other costs to run the program. As a result, when the state faced the necessity of cutting positions from all departments, 2 of the 4 positions gained via the 2000 legislature were cut. Today, there remains a teacher position on Oahu and 1 on the Big Island, funded by the federal grant. An additional position on Kauai and a half position on Oahu also provide services for OIB, but are not funded by the federal OIB grant. In the not-distant future, there will be once again enough funds for more direct service to be provided, whether the grant ever gets amended or not. It took a great deal of effort on the part of many people to get the OIB program up and running. There was a very short time frame when the discretionary grant was first received in the 1980s to start showing statewide results. That is why the initial decision was to subcontract with the HCIL. They did a good job in some areas, but program staff firmly believed that it would be best to hire their own teachers. That proved to be the right decision, and even though two of those positions were lost, the staff in place do excellent work, providing services that make a difference. As more money becomes available, it may not prove possible to add state positions once again, but it will more than likely be possible to enter arrangements where SBB can continue to ensure the high value of services delivered. An OIB participant best summed up the impact of the OIB program with these words: "I cannot express enough gratitude for what the Ho'opono OIB program has provided me. I can do things for myself. I do not have to be dependent or a burden on family members. I have hope for my future. I enjoy being alive." Education and Community Outreach. The state revised statutes stipulate that Ho'opono is to serve as a resource to the community on blindness issues and as a proponent of prevention of blindness activities. The agency is mandated to maintain a blind register. For many years, Ho'opono conducted glaucoma screenings for elementary school children throughout the island of Oahu. This activity faded away during the early 1990s, but in recent years has been going strong once again and is spearheaded by Lions Clubs, with assistance from agency staff. Former Adjustment Section Supervisor and Lion Sam Fisk took a lead role in revitalizing the screenings upon his retirement. Newsline, an automated newspaper and community announcement service, was funded initially by a grant from the Weinberg Foundation. The branch assisted in the writing of the grant application, which called for the project to initially be run by the nonprofit Assistive Technology Resource Center. Over the years, Newsline has been funded by various sources, including VR. It has proved to be a valuable resource. 1996 and the first part of 1997 saw two tragic accidents involving a current and a former Ho'opono consumer. Both died as the result of vehicle drivers not seeing them or not slowing down in time. One was using his white cane, and the other one was not, although he was in a crosswalk. A close friend of one of the deceased called and said to make sure the agency informs all those who receive services that they need to use their white cane when traveling. It was determined that what was at one time an annual event, the White Cane Walk, held on National White Cane Awareness Day, needed to be revitalized to draw attention to the white cane and the rights of blind people to travel freely throughout the community. Thus, the walks were reinitiated on October 15, 1997. About 100 walkers participated that day in a route which started at the Capitol, proceeded throughout the downtown area, and ended at the Iolana Palace grounds. That year also saw the first of several proclamation ceremonies by the governor, and at times the mayor, recognizing the importance of the white cane as a tool for independence and safe travel. Thanks to the efforts of Community Services Coordinator Shirley Sasaki and her successors John Koki
and Gavin Abe,
the event continued to grow. A placard to be placed on 500 public buses was created. The card was a cartoon drawn by volunteer Corky Trinidad, which stressed in a humorous way the right of those who are blind to travel about the community on their own. Television and print coverage of the walk became an annual occurrence. One year, perennial radio ratings champions Perry and Price spotlighted the walk via a segment from the Hanahano Room. Celebrities and politicians took turns leading the walks. They included First Lady Vicky Cayetano, B.B. Sean, Governor Linda Lingle, Lieutenant Governor Duke Iona, and Mayor Jeremy Harris. Today, 250 to 275 walkers take part in what has become an event those in the blind community look forward to year after year. Department of Education teachers and their students take part, as do Leos and Lions, current and former Ho'opono students, and involved citizens. Lions clubs provide refreshments at the end, which includes time for participants to relax and socialize. A resource fair was held in 2000 to assist with getting the word out about agency programs and services. Over 130 people showed up. Community partners such as the Library for the Blind and Island Skills Gathering were provided space to share their information. Optometrist Dr. Miles Fujinaka gave a seminar on eye conditions, and the police talked about awareness safety. There was television coverage. Subsequent years saw this activity morph into what became known as Ho'opono Open House and Alumni Day. The Friends of Ho'opono and Delta Gammas provided refreshments. The Ho'opono Advisory Board assisted with guest registration, tours, event setup, and in other areas. Staff continued to partner with various Lions clubs. The Lions of Honolulu were charged by Helen Keller herself in 1935 to be Knights for the Blind of Hawaii. It is a charge that has been taken seriously for decades by many Lion Club members. Annual events included the Honolulu Club's Blind Person of the Year Award and the Windward Side Club's annual picnic. The Lions have given freely of their time and resources to make center improvements, which enhance consumer services. Agency staff as well as advisory board members took part in numerous senior fairs, community fairs, and hulalias. Staff have assisted with presentations at schools, and one high school in particular requested for staff to talk to the entire student body about appropriate ways to interact with their fellow students. That presentation had a positive impact as school life became more pleasant for those blind students on campus. A technology room at the Ho'opono Center, for the public to use, was set up in 2008. Equipment was purchased and instruction provided to the members of the blind community at large. Due to the necessity of the VR administrative office moving to the Bachelet Street location, the technology resource room was later relocated to nonprofit Assistive Technology Resource Center, located in the downtown area. Other outreach activities included development of program informational videos, technology seminars, low vision seminars for eye health professionals, brochures created and dropped off at iDoc offices, and radio, TV, and print interviews. Several staff proudly took part in local and national conferences. Numerous school and community presentations were made. New vision students, along with adjustment section staff, started a give-back program, which included ongoing bus stop fixture painting and neighborhood cleanup projects. They also implemented a reading program at a nearby elementary school. These projects afforded the new visions students the ability to give back and make meaningful contributions. A large part of community outreach and education is connected to the two blind consumer groups that are affiliated with national organizations. Those groups are the Hawaii Association of the Blind, HAB, a chapter of the American Council of the Blind, and the National Federation of the Blind Hawaii Affiliate, NFBH. Let it be stated that both groups have been tremendous supporters and friends of Ho'opono. They have donated money as well as time. Without their moral and monetary support, Ho'opono would not be the agency it has become. Transformation. The Business Enterprise Program, BEP, is the most successful employment program ever created by the federal government. State law strengthened the program. Basically, the laws mandate that space be given for blind persons to operate facilities on properties owned or leased by government entities. The history of Hawaii's BEP is multi-layered. Thanks to the input of current long-term vendors, plans are underway to work on a detailed write-up of its historical significance and complexities in the not-too-distant future. The other program described in this section is the training center model of instruction known as Structured Discovery and locally dubbed New Visions. Events during the years described that what happened to these programs resulted in a different agency. BEP, Hawaii's first vending facility, was located at the main post office on Richard Street. Since then, the program has seen steady growth. Today, there are 41 licensed vendors operating out of 39 locations. Hawaii is a leader as to the number of vending sites and licensed managers per capita. The local BEP is consistently ranked as one of the top programs for average net income. With daily interactions going on between vendors and thousands of customers, gross annual sales of over $30 million, and competition for open facilities, there are bound to be issues that have to be dealt with. Some of those which arose from 1994 to 2009 include the following: drafting written responses for the governor, meeting with facility managers regarding formal complaints, dealing with verbal and written complaints from customers, theft of government property, loss of revenue due to equipment failure, and evidentiary hearings. There is support available when dealing with these types of issues. Depending on the situation, the following resources were very helpful: VR Administration, AG's Office, the State Committee of Blind Vendors, SBB staff, and historical records. The program is tasked with making continual efforts to locate and develop additional vending facility and vending machine sites. Program also has a responsibility to assist individual vendors to maximize income received at their site. This is one of the main reasons why a task force was started in 2002 with program, committee, and AG representation. The lack of perceived effort on the agency's part had led to an earlier lawsuit. The plaintiffs included members of the Committee of Licensed Vendors, and defendants were the agency. The case went to trial, and the agency lost. A summary judgment in the amount of $2.7 million plus attorney fees was levied. In addition, the judge added, on her own volition, several equitable relief items. The agency was ordered to set up private individual health and retirement accounts. The state appealed, which resulted in the monetary judgment being placed on hold during the appeal process. The agency had, for several years, been providing funds as voted on by the Committee for Health and Retirement directly to the individual vendors. After the trial, though, specific health and retirement accounts were established, which allowed direct deposit of funds. It eventually became optional for the vendors as to whether or not the funds would go to those accounts or directly to them. These monies came from unassigned vending machine income. The state Supreme Court ordered the parties to go through mediation to try and reach an agreement, rather than the court having to rule on the appeal. Mediation did not resolve the issues. The court ended up ruling that established due process was not followed. The plaintiffs then tried to get the case docketed by the U.S. Supreme Court, but it was not placed on their agenda. The agency did not have to pay any money, but did continue good faith efforts to follow the equitable relief items. Most all states have a BEP, and those programs are located with the state VR units, with the entity which provides blind services designated as the state licensing agency. Ho'opono is charged with carrying out the duties and responsibilities of the RS program throughout the state. The law mandates that there exists an elected committee made up of blind vendors, and that active participation take place as regards program policies and operations. There have been challenges to ensuring that active participation takes place. A mediated agreement was signed by both program and committee members in 2007, which provides active participation guidelines. The agreement lists responsibilities that both program and licensed vendors are to adhere to. The working out of the agreement was a positive development. The same can be said for the joint development of the current transfer and promotion policy, the updating of the Hawaii administrative rules, which pertain to BEP, and the strategic plan to obtain program objectives and goals. Due to circumstances not long after the strategic plan was completed, the BEP entered an extended period of time with no direct assigned professional staff. The unit secretary and account clerk, though, filled in admirably. The branch secretary also assisted. Additional vending staff were eventually hired and trained. The BEP still has staff shortages, but vacancies have been filled and a new business manager is to be hired soon. Also, in the past year, the program was able to hire a trainer. The distrust on the part of the vendors towards the program started decades ago. There were difficulties that arose when Governor Quinn was in office, and local vendors fought successfully to save the program. There were also Honolulu International Airport concession operators that got displaced when the department and SBB put in place a nonprofit to run vending facilities at HIA. This action, in turn, led to committee members suing the agency. The parties were eventually remanded to go through mediation. A settlement was agreed to, which resulted in agreements for HIA and NI airports as to the operation of vending facilities and machines by licensed blind vendors. The nonprofit was given notice. They decided to put up a fight and conducted an all-out publicity blitz during the first part of April 1994. That was the month in which the blind vendors known as the Blind Vendor Ohana were to take over operations at HIA. Several full-page ads of people in wheelchairs and those with other disabling conditions were placed in the major newspapers, with information as to whom the public could complain to about these people being forced out of a job. There were angry phone calls and letters, but the turnover to BVO went on as planned. The nonprofit dissolved, and a substantial portion of its remaining assets were given to the Friends of Ho'opono. Given the historical acrimony, it is a wonder that the relations between program and the Committee of Blind Vendors ever improved. Thanks to the efforts of the Attorney General's Office, DAG Susan Kern, consultants Terry Smith and Catriona McDonald, VR Administrator Joe Cordova, licensed vendors and SBB staff, the relationship between the committee and program did get better, especially when compared to 1994. Hawaii has long had one of the most successful programs in the nation. Facility sites and the number of licensed vendors have grown during a time when the national trend has been in the opposite direction. New types of facilities have come on board, such as military troop dining and for-profit cafeteria operations. Many licensed vendors have developed a positive attitude about blindness, which leaves a positive perception among their customers and building managers. There has advanced a shared effort among the blind vendors and program to assure that the BEP meets the needs of the public, the building operators, and the individual blind vendor. New visions. A medical model of rehabilitation was followed by many, if not most, state agencies for the blind as they started to build and grow. Hawaii was no different, as evidenced by the description of staff positions. Travel instructors were classified as orientation and mobility therapists, and a shop teacher as a manual arts therapist. There were 3 occupational therapists and 2 social workers. Contrast colors were used for doors and walkways. Arrows were painted on campus sidewalks. The low vision clinic was established to help meet prevention of blindness needs. A unit within the workshop was designated as the day activity program. High school choirs, local celebrities, and musical volunteers performed regularly for workshop employees and center students, called clients at that time. And it did not take much imagination for them to picture the audience as being made up of patients. The workshop put on an annual Lay Day show featuring employees and volunteers that filled the auditorium to capacity each year. This is not meant to imply there was anything wrong with any of this. The Low Vision Clinic has benefited thousands of individuals, and indeed, the Lay Day event in particular brought much joy to participants and audience alike. It is illustrated, though, to make the point that Ho'opono was developed and nurtured along the lines of the medical rehabilitation model. In 1968, some local blind consumers spent several days at the Iowa Department for the Blind. Blindness rehabilitation trailblazer Dr. Kenneth Jernigan, at that time, was chief of Iowa's program. By the time of their visit, the program based out of Des Moines was accomplishing great things, and program graduates were making their mark in a wide range of professional fields. The local people returned enthusiastic about possibilities for Ho'opono. They succeeded in getting the state legislature to pass a resolution authorizing a complete study of the state's blind services. The study made several key recommendations, among them the consolidation of blind programs, including the Library for the Blind, within the Ho'opono organizational structure. Others included the provision of a residential facility for center students and promotion of a positive attitude about blindness. The application of what later became known as structured discovery, a method for teaching the acquisition of the alternative skills of blindness, was emphasized. The study was presented to the Ho'opono Advisory Board. At that time, the work being done in Iowa was far different than that being done by most all other established programs for the blind, and there was much evidence that the work being done at Ho'opono was outstanding. The board weighed these factors and ultimately decided that it was best to not adopt most of the key recommendations. Although their efforts to better the program were for the most part rejected, the consumers involved did not give up hope that one day significant changes would occur. I do not know whether the people who went off to Iowa in 1968 continued to promote changes be made over the course of the next several years, or if they decided to bide their time. It is known that in April 1994, the senior partner of Blind Vendors Ohana, Mr. Philo Tu, upon learning I was originally from Iowa, recommended a visit there, and he said they had a great program. Instead, though, my initial training took place at the Mississippi State University Blindness Professional Summer Program. So a visit to Des Moines was put on hold. Years later, the director of the Iowa Rehabilitation Center, Dr. Sandy Tigges, was the featured speaker at the Hawaii Association of the Blind annual convention. Her presentation was very powerful, and afterwards, the event spokesperson told the audience that Dave Eveland should go back to Iowa to learn what an outstanding program looks like. At the time, I was taken aback, but on the other hand, had to admit that I had never visited a program like the one in Iowa. Shortly after the HAB convention, the Iowa Department announced that they would host a training conference for blindness rehabilitation professionals in October. VR boss Neil Shim agreed that my attendance at the conference would provide a good opportunity to learn about their program and find out just what it was they did different from what was being done at Ho'opono. The conference was an amazing experience. There were panel presentations from current and former students, discussions about learning cane travel without the aid of remaining vision, and informative tours. One of the Iowa instructors asked if the HAB people were setting up their own center yet. This was surprising news, as I had heard nothing about the possibility of a nonprofit blindness rehab center in Honolulu. By the end of the 3-day session, one could tell that the Iowa program produced outstanding results, that their staff had very high morale, and that the program was thought of highly by community residents. What really sold the possibility of change at home was a talk given by Iowa Commissioner Julie Scher. Her life story was incredible, and what stuck was when she said, "We in Iowa like to say, if you're blind, lucky you live in Iowa." Lucky you live in Iowa, I could not believe my ears. During the first 18 years of my life, when I lived there, I did not recall ever hearing that said about Iowa. Plus, that saying was a takeoff of the often said phrase about the islands. The thought occurred, how great it would be if in addition to hearing, "Lucky you live Hawaii," one could someday hear, "You blind? Lucky you live Hawaii." Oahu branch VR counselor Leah Gruppen was hired as SBB's counseling section supervisor in November 2000. Prior to her hire, new counselors and supervisors at SBB had been sent to the Mississippi State program. Permission was received to instead send Ms. Gruppen for immersion training in Des Moines at the Iowa Department for the Blind. Leah spent 2 weeks there going through all the classes at Iowa as a student, which means she, like them, wore sleep shades throughout the day as well as on evening field trips. Decembers are cold in Des Moines, but Ms. Gruppen persevered and learned as much as possible. Dr. Tigges reported that she had been an exceptional student and had made lifelong friends, and to look forward to some interesting conversations upon her return. Leah returned to Hawaii, as did the consumers who spent time at Iowa 32 years prior, full of enthusiasm for possibilities at home. At the Hawaii affiliate of the National Federation of the Blind annual convention, a few months after her return, she gave a memorable speech. Ms. Gruppen said she had a dream that one day students who attended Ho'opono would be as proficient in the alternative skills of blindness as those at Iowa, that Hawaii residents would receive as good a quality of services as those at Iowa, and that Ho'opono students would develop the positive attitude that would enable them to achieve what they dreamed they could achieve. Immediately after the speech, affiliate president Nanny Fife said that she had chicken skin, and she was sure many others in the audience did as well. To further her training, Leah was signed up as a National Executive Leadership Institute student based at the University of Oklahoma. She attended 4 one-week sessions on campus, spread out over about 2 years. While there, she got to know Carlos Servan, the deputy director of the Nebraska Department for the Blind. Nebraska was one of the first states to follow Dr. Jernigan's model. Much was learned about structured discovery from Carlos and shared with those back home. Several other blind rehabilitation professionals from around the country also started sharing information as to the benefits of the Iowa model. Leah began to gently press administration towards moving to adopt structured discovery techniques. In the meantime, Adjustment Section Supervisor Sam Fisk was sent to Des Moines to take part in a 2-week session as a student. Sam returned with copious notes of each day's activities. He witnessed the impact of the Iowa program, but being the long-term supervisor of Adjustment Section, he was not sure of the ability for Ho'opono to employ the structured discovery method. His section, at that time, consisted of 2 seasoned mobility instructors, 2 occupational therapists, a long-term personal home management instructor, a social group worker, and a communications curriculum teacher for Braille and technology. Most of them had never been exposed to structured discovery techniques. How they would respond to a new model was unknown. A trainer was sought who could help introduce staff to structured discovery and hopefully teach applicable skills. Dr. Fred Schroeder, former Commissioner of Rehabilitation Services Administration, recommended Doug Boone. A contract was drawn up, and Doug provided several week-long sessions and cane travel that all agency staff eventually participated in. He also provided some advanced sessions for center instructors and home rehabilitation teachers, as well as one-on-one work with mobility instructors and the manual arts instructor. Doug, with his non-threatening approach to learning blindness skills with no sight, did a terrific job. Shortly after Doug's sessions began, Dr. Fred McFarland, from the InterWorks Institute at San Diego State University, provided some training for VR managers and asked administration if having Dr. Schroeder come over to assist with the change process would be welcomed. Soon afterwards, Dr. Schroeder started providing consultation and advice. He met with instructional staff individually and observed classes. Recommendations were made to the Ho'opono management team, which consisted at that time of Leah, John, Sam, and me. The management team met with all of the instructional staff and got their input as to the structured discovery method. Comments made at these meetings were all over the map. Staff was informed that they could voluntarily go to spend 2 weeks at the Iowa or other structured discovery-based center. Several of the instructors went. Countless meetings were held among the management team, hashing out what needed to be done if the center were to change. It became obvious by the fall of 2001 that the program was headed towards making a significant shift. San Diego started sending Iowa's director, Al Harris, along with Fred Schroeder, to Ho'opono. Al, a former wrestling coach and high school administrator, had a different but no less effective style than Fred in his interactions with staff and students. In early 2002, it was thought that a repeat visit by Dr. Sandy Tigges would be helpful. Sandy had been running the Iowa Center for years, and she would be most effective in cementing the change process. When contacted by phone, Dr. Tigges replied that she would love to come over, but would do so only on the condition that the program guarantee her that the change to the structured discovery model would happen, and that during her 1 week on site, a definite date would be set for the change to occur. "Yes, that's doable," was the immediate response. Sandy got her ticket. The decision to commit to change the program was not casually made. Although Dr. Jernigan's model was proven effective, and there was much evidence to the benefits of such, very few state agencies over the years fully employed it. Over time, a split had evolved among the 2 major consumer groups as to structured discovery implementation, which complicated attempts for state agencies to change. Conditions and timing were right, however, in 2002, for Ho'opono to take a leap of faith to commit itself to providing the best program delivery model of blind skill instruction possible. Prior to Dr. Tigges' visit, a memo was issued to branch staff stating that the program would switch to the structured discovery model. The memo stipulated that new visions would require students to attend the center on a full-time basis, to take all the classes offered at the center, to use the long white cane at all times while on campus and on field trips, and that for those with remaining vision, sleep shades would be worn the whole day with the exception of lunch. The memo also stipulated that staff would be required to utilize the structured discovery method of teaching and to display a positive attitude about blindness. Sandy met with individuals and groups, including the current students. November 1, 8 months hence, was agreed upon as the day to make the change. Sandy, Fred, and Al all felt the program would be ready by that time. The students attending the adjustment program, though, were not pleased. Some of them had been coming for classes a la carte style. They would take what they wanted and not others. There had been no time frame in place since the deafblind population left the center for students to leave the program. A few had been coming to the center for years. They were told that they could all stay another 8 months, and if they felt they needed further instruction after that, they could take part as New Vision students. Most of them did not welcome the prospect of wearing sleep shades or having to come to the center every day for the whole day. Letters were written to legislators, and the branch responded to those inquiries verbally and in writing. Joanne Wilson, whom at the time was the RSA commissioner, visited the state and made a speech in the auditorium. She did her best to assuage student concerns and explain the good to be gained from new visions. Throughout that summer, training stepped up for instructional staff. Those who had not gone away for 2 weeks yet at a structured discovery-based center were sent. Those who wanted additional training on the mainland were sent again. Instructors practiced their structured discovery techniques. Class curriculums were reviewed. Criteria for graduating was established. Consultants made it clear that it could take 10 years to get to the level of where established structured discovery programs were. They were also in agreement that the sooner the change took effect, the better off the blind of Hawaii would be. A town hall-style meeting was held in the auditorium. Questions and answers were taken. There was good discussion, and although some in the audience were skeptical, most left with a better understanding of the reasons for the change and what the agency hoped to accomplish. During the meeting, Nanny Fife, Philo Tu, and Warren Toyama, key officers of both HAB and NFBH, stood up and backed the program for its decision and pledged support for new visions. The leaders of the two groups embraced. Hawaii was blessed that the local affiliates of the national consumer groups fully backed the shift to the structured discovery model. The groups helped shepherd the program through its transition stages and continue to give freely of their time and resources. The official start date, November 1, 2002, occurred without incident. There were no protests. Staff was glad that the day finally arrived, and for the most part pleased that the agency had committed itself to the new program. Management had expected a firestorm initially, but nothing serious occurred. There were complaints about the sleep shades, tinkering with type of shade worn, requests for exemptions from attending all the classes, and so on. Regardless of concerns raised, the news of the good to be gained from taking part in the new training program spread, and there was soon a waiting list of students eager to get started. The consultants continued to make periodic visits. Dr. Eddie Bell of Louisiana Tech was added to the mix. Dr. Bell created an evaluation tool that included standards where students should be regarding the acquisition of blindness skills after a certain amount of training hours. Initial reports showed that the students were progressing, but that there was room for program improvement. Another town hall meeting was held after new visions had been in place for a year. At the meeting, however, a petition was circulated by some consumers who had not attended new visions, requesting that the program be closely scrutinized. Two of the first bunch of new vision students praised the program. One said it saved his life, and the other that it provided hope for the future. Their statements boosted commitment to stay the course. Longtime VR administrator Neil Shim retired in early 2004. Shortly afterwards, I was summoned to appear at a legislative conference room. Upon entering, there were 24 current and former Ho'opono consumers representing blind vendors, the older blind, and former center students. One by one, the consumers present listed their complaints. Some of the older blinds stated that they thought the agency was stealing money from their grant. Vendors said they were there to learn and listen to those who had complaints. And students said they felt pushed out when New Vision started. Some of the past students said the use of sleep shades was bothersome. And one stood up and, with tears in her eyes, stated that the shades made what little vision she had left worse. At the conclusion of the meeting, the legislator who had set it up asked how the department would respond, and the director's office stated that both written and oral responses would be provided. A follow-up session for such to be presented was set for 2 weeks later. The concerns were categorized and responses developed. At the follow-up meeting, I sat at the conference table facing four legislators. It was not a formal hearing, but it had the tone of one. Dr. Schroeder, who happened to be in town that day, sat alongside for support. Print and braille copies of what had been prepared were passed out, and the concerns and responses were then read aloud. There was time for question and answers. The reasons for the New Vision program and for the changes to the older blind were explained. The leaders of the two consumer groups again expressed support for Ho'opono and for its efforts to deliver quality instructional training and for the direction of the older blind program. Those in attendance were reminded of the agency's open-door policy and were promised that, as had been done in the past, that I would gladly meet with respective individuals and organizations at their convenience. At the end of the session, the legislator in charge said that he saw no need for a formal investigation, and the others agreed. The firestorm that was anticipated in 2002 had taken over a year to occur, and New Visions had survived intact. Afterwards, Dr. Schroeder said that you could count on one hand the number of programs around the country which would have stood their ground when faced with similar circumstances. The beat continued and formal agreements were worked out with the InterWorks Institute to provide ongoing training, primarily for the Ho'opono Adjustment Section Supervisor and for the Adjustment Section Instructional Staff. Dr. Eddie Bell was named the coordinator of the project. Instructors from the three National Federation of the Blind training centers located in Minnesota, Colorado, and Louisiana, as well as staff from the Iowa Department for the Blind, were scheduled to come to Ho'opono on an ongoing basis to work with staff on a one-on-one basis. Evaluations of each instructor's progress as regards to assisting their students to meet performance standards were completed after each visit. This was an expensive undertaking. Acting Administrator John Noland signed off the initial arrangement, and later Joe Cordova approved an expanded version. Ideally, for instructors to become proficient at structured discovery techniques, they would spend 6 months to 1 year learning such. Indeed, the blindness professional training at Louisiana Tech University calls for that much time to be spent as a student in a center learning skills in order to obtain a master's degree. There was just no practical way, however, to send current Ho'opono staff off to the mainland for half a year or more. Although instructors had made a great deal of progress prior to and after the start of New Visions, it was determined that for optimal benefits for consumers, the model described needed to take place. Each instructor ended up receiving 6 to 8 one-week one-on-one consultation and training from their counterparts in the other centers. For example, the Braille teacher from another center would work with the agency Braille teacher, observing and modeling during instructional time. The model proved to be worth every penny. The instructors got better. Some of the instructors retired. Successful recruiting efforts resulted in finding replacements that, after going through several months of training, proved to be well indoctrinated in the techniques of structured discovery. In 2002, there was only one adjustment section instructor whom could be classified as legally blind. A few years later, the majority were. October 2008, just 6 years after the start of New Visions, Ho'opono became at that time one of two state agencies to have received certification as a blindness skill training center of excellence from the National Blindness Professional Certification Board. What that recognition meant was that Hawaii residents would receive as good as blindness skill training at Ho'opono as could be found anywhere in the nation. The next year, all members of the adjustment section staff were recognized as the department's Team of the Year for their efforts in making New Visions a reality. These accomplishments speak volumes as to the personal dedication, commitment, and work that the branch staff put into New Visions. That the program became a successful one is due to their efforts. The start of New Visions presented several logistical difficulties for those from the neighbor islands. There was no boarding available near campus, which meant people from off Oahu were housed in hotels. In the past, those from the other islands would not stay for training longer than a week or two, but with the onset of New Visions, a criteria was put in place that consumers plan to attend classes full-time for at least 2 months. That criterion was set as a minimum standard because, for most students, it takes 6 to 9 months to gain the full benefit of training. This requirement put a financial burden on VR counselors' budgets. Visits to other centers also highlighted the fact that when there was housing close by or at a center, consumers benefited greatly from additional learning opportunities and from getting to know each other. As a consequence, it was decided that SBB should make efforts to locate apartment space in a building near the center. In Honolulu, finding affordable long-term rentals is no easy task. Leah located some vacant units in a nearby apartment building. Sam offered to help secure the leases for the units and to serve as liaison with the building management. Branch staff selected an on-site resident manager, and the Ho'opono hail became a reality. Sam also volunteered to establish the community technology room. This provided the opportunity for Leah Gruppen to directly manage the adjustment section and its New Visions program. Eventually, 10 units in the walk-up apartment building were leased. 2-bedroom units were obtained on different levels of the 4-story building. Sam next got the units furnished and staffed. The addition of the apartment component added more responsibility for both staff and students. It also increased dramatically blindness skill learning opportunities, thanks to resident outings and apartment management. The staff on-site apartment manager and instructors welcomed the resident component. In 2009, the state found itself, like most states at that time, needing to cut its budget. Several SBB staff positions were lost, and others were frozen. The administrative secretary position was rift due to unfortunate circumstances. Upon my retirement, at the end of 2009, Ms. Gruppen served as acting administrator and ran the adjustment section at the same time. The nonprofit attached, known as the Friends of Ho'opono, made significant monetary contributions, which allowed for the several consumers to be able to continue their training programs. The crisis the branch faced at the end of 2009 was in some ways worse than the one faced in early 1994. This time, though, the morale climate remained high. The quality of services delivered stayed at a very high level. That they did so is a credit to the staff's professionalism and belief in the program. The economic picture brightened a little during 2012. Leah became the permanent administrator, and administrative secretary Jerry Mitomi returned. Other key positions, such as the Braille teacher, were restored and filled. Eventually, the branch will probably be back to where it was staff-wise prior to the recession. The words Dr. Schroeder had spoken prior to the start of New Visions about morale improving rang true.
Youth and Outdoor Experiences Programming. A fun part of the job is described in this section. For this old camp counselor, being able to have an active role in these activities was deeply appreciated. Camps. As New Visions became established, it was thought that it would be good to provide some sort of structured discovery programming for youth in an outdoor setting. Possible sites were explored, and it was decided to hold the first camp, Ho'opono, on the north shore of Oahu at YMCA Camp Erdman in June of 2004. The week proved to be one of good fun, as well as great cane travel practice. Camp included kayaking, hiking, challenge course, campfires, discussions on blindness, swimming, water volleyball, beach walking, and time for feeling the ocean breeze. Subsequent camps for youth were held, with some also involving the adult students from the center. The first year, the group did not make it too far in a canyon on a hike, but as skills improved in following years, they would go all the way to the end of the canyon, as well as more difficult hikes up the Kilia and Kaina Point trails. The first year also had very limited camper participation on the ropes course. but by the next year all took part in the Ropes Challenge course. The camps provided some lively moments, especially the earlier ones. A camper was left behind during the night walk on the beach. Luckily, she stayed put until the group returned. There was a fist fight among two male campers. The Y staff had one staff person stationed at the first platform for their old ropes course. That course was built in the trees, and only one camper at a time could be on any one section. It was replaced by a state-of-the-art Odyssey Challenge course the next year. On the old course, there were instances of campers not clipping on and off properly, so it was fortunate Ho'opono staff were nearby to assist. Other camp incidents included the need to limit public and private displays of affection and banishing the boys from entering the girls' cabins. Missing breakfast became an issue to deal with. Kayaking in the open ocean when swells came in caused a staff person to get seasick. A volunteer role model paddled way too far away from the group. A homesick camper was flown home to her neighbor island. Another one hyperventilated going up the Kealia Trail. One staff person, after being egged on by shouts of "Go, go, go," climbed up a wall beyond the Crystal Canyon endpoint. On the descent down, however, he fell several feet and was lucky to escape with only a sore okole and blistered hands. These and other issues which arose at camp always seemed minor when compared to the gains campers and staff made. The closing campfire and talent show night reinforced the positive reasons for holding the camps. Haleakala. Thought was given to, in addition to camp, offering an opportunity for youth to spend time in roadless wilderness settings. With the full cooperation of Haleakala's nature resource director, Ron Nagata, 4-day backpacking service excursions through the summit area of Haleakala National Park were completed during the summers of 2006 and 2007. As the trips involved carrying one's own gear and hiking several miles, a number of practice hikes beforehand were done. The service aspect involved spending a non-hiking day pulling noxious weeds near the Kapaloa cabin. This provided an opportunity to give back to the natural environment. The goal to get in touch with the Aina by spending time without computers or modern conveniences in a very special Hawaiian place was accomplished. In addition to hiking and pulling weeds, trekkers navigated the length of the Holua lava tube. The tube entrance requires a descent down a steep ladder and careful walking to avoid drop-offs and stalagmites for its 200-plus meter length. Many a person has balked at completing the walk all the way through. The Haleakala trips were physically challenging. The first day involved a hike of 6 miles. The second day, campers worked 8 hours pulling weeds. A little free time was left for exploring, but most were too tired to do so. Day 3 was the hike through the center of the crater to the Holua cabin on the west side and walking through the lava tube. Day 4 was the exit out, which involved booking up the Halemau Trail switchbacks. Youth were assigned kitchen and cabin duties and all carried them out faithfully. The cabins were built during the Depression era and had gas stoves but no electricity. After sunset, they proved to be perfect venues for ghost stories. The group also got to use tents in the crater. Outside the tent sites on the final night, the campers put on a hilarious skit playing the adult roles. No one ever got hurt on these trips, but the second year, one camper had to be airlifted out. She had not been feeling well when the trip started, and during the second night developed a fever and was vomiting. Ranger Ron called for a chopper, and we flew over the center of the crater to park headquarters. From there, she was taken to the airport and got a flight home. After that, I went back up to the trailhead and hiked down to meet the group at Holua in time to go through the lava tube. That may well prove to be the last time a group from the center will get to go through the Holua tube, as the metal ladder that aided descents for decades has recently been removed. Yellowstone. The Iowa Department for the Blind had planned to join the Ho'opono group for its summer camp in 2007, but their plans were stymied, so instead they offered to meet our youth at a place of our choosing on the mainland. Yellowstone was decided upon, as that side afforded campsites to accommodate both groups and also the opportunity for new experiences. Fishing, hiking, spotting wildlife, and spending time by geysers was enjoyed. The trip also gave the opportunity for Hawaii youth to meet and make friends with people from a different part of the country. Our group flew into Rapid City, South Dakota, where the Iowa Department for the Blind bus was waiting to pick them up. Along the way to Wyoming, they visited Mount Rushmore and Wind Caves National Parks. There were 40 people altogether on this trip, which presented logistical challenges while traveling, but good fun was had by all. A highlight was the day spent getting wet while rafting on the Yellowstone River. The Grand Canyon and beyond. In 2008, a raft trip down the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon was undertaken. Arizona River Runners was the company utilized, and they were great. Their attitude was that our group could and would do everything the people with sight did on these trips. That meant there would be moments of great joy. Examples include forming trains while floating bareback down the Little Colorado Rapids, hiking up to Native American granaries, yelping through giant rapids, setting up tents during a sudden thunderstorm, walking along rock shale and climbing ropes and ladders to hidden waterfalls as described in the introduction. There were also moments of peace, sleeping on sandbars night after night, counting asteroids, and listening to the river, though not as thrilling as other moments, were nonetheless fulfilling. An unexpected benefit of the trip was getting to know the adults from throughout the country on a neighbor boat. By the end of the trip, both groups came to appreciate the other's gifts and talents. Our party did not realize that there would be another boat traveling alongside ours, made up of adults from around the country, and they certainly were not expecting us. When we got off our boat, several of them had mouths agape at the scene of a group of teenagers and adults using white canes. As the week went on, though, members of both groups grew to know and respect each other. On the final evening alongside the river, the youth put on a talent show replete with ukulele and hula. The members of the other boat took so many flash pictures during the performance that one could easily imagine they were at a rock concert. One adult said that he came on the trip to appreciate nature and was returning, appreciating the human spirit even more. The youth came to appreciate the different types of careers the adults had and what it took to become accomplished. Volunteer Stinnett did much to win the adults over. He rowed with their boat. On the day Captain Bob said, "We are going on a hike above Deer Creek Falls, where there are sheer drop-offs," he and a youth did not hesitate to go. When they got to the turnaround spot, the other boat people were highly impressed. They were also impressed by the willingness of the Hawaii youth to pitch in at loading and unloading and mealtimes. Some noted that the kids were always smiling and having fun. Their good nature rubbed off on them. Partly by design, but at the start of youth programming out of necessity, there was a concentrated effort to ensure that for each youth activity, adult role models would serve as chaperones and counselors. The impact of campers being alongside Debbie, Dean, Shelford, Brooke, Katie, and Maureen, high on the ropes at Camp Erdman, or with Virgil scaling the cliff above Deer Creek Falls, cannot be measured. In the summer of 2009, programming switched to be more center-based to provide youth job exploration and work experience opportunities. Thanks to the efforts of SBB's Annette Toshiro and Gavin Abe, a partnership was forged with the City and County Youth Work Program, designating Ho'opono as an official summer work site. The program has grown by leaps and bounds since 2009, and many youth have gained valuable lessons about work and what it takes to forge a successful career. Outdoor experience continued in 2010, with NFBH taking the lead role and Ho'opono staff serving as volunteers for a sea kayaking adventure in Alaska. Over $30,000 was raised to make this trip possible. One of the major monetary contributions came from the Weinberg Foundation in recognition of two youths' participation in a televised music concert. The group spent 5 nights during the summer equinox in Prince William Sound's Icy Bay. It was an adventure none will ever forget. It is believed that youth experiences, whether in outdoor setting or in the jobs program, instills lessons and values of long-standing nature. They also build confidence. After hiking out the Halema'u Trail with its gain of 1,200 feet, a youth from Kauai declared, "My mom could not have done this." Confidence and belief in the ability of blind people was also gained by branch staff. New Visions played a huge role in the development among staff of the confidence in the ability of blind people. Without such, it is doubtful the activities described could have taken place. The satisfaction of accomplishment from climbing a ridge, the thrill of riding the zip line, the joy of water pounding on campers' heads did happen, though, and will remain a part of all who participated. Let the journey begin anew. Hope rises, the dream endures. Ted Kennedy. When Commissioner Wilson gave her 2002 talk in the auditorium, she challenged listeners to figure out what their philosophy of blindness was. Philo, in Greek, means to love or love of, and Sophia is wisdom. Thus, philosophy can readily be interpreted as the love of wisdom. Dr. Wilson's charge to figure out one's philosophy was for people to think through and decide what they believe to be true, right, and lasting about the nature of blindness. That thinking was later applied in 2002 during a branch staff team meeting to create the mission and vision statements for the New Visions program. The mission statement reads, "Ho'opono will provide the knowledge, skills, and attitude one needs to succeed in life." The vision statement is, "Blindness is not a barrier to success. Knowledge, skills, and attitude are essential ingredients towards building a sound philosophy as to the true nature of blindness." That philosophy has played a vital role in the agency journey, not just for New Visions, but for all services and programs it provides. It is baffling to ponder the many circumstances which led to the formation of New Visions. There are several coincidences which, if they had not occurred at the time they did, under the conditions they did, there would have never been a New Visions. Events such as the prompting for a visit to Iowa, followed shortly after by the concurrent timing of the Iowa conference with the hiring of Ms. Gruppen, enhances appreciation of the New Visions story. It was fairly common for former students to return to the center to receive additional training when their personal situations changed. This is known as recidivism, and since the start of New Visions, the incidence of such has decreased dramatically. The agency now receives funds from VR agencies located in Guam and other Pacific Rim entities when they send students to New Visions. There has been a remarkable increase of such students attending the center. Former New Visions students have been hired as mobility, braille, technology, and home management instructors, rehabilitation teachers, and in other capacities. Dean Georgiev, a blind individual, now serves as the supervisor of the adjustment section and its orientation center. Other noticeable changes as a result of New Visions include the following: increase in reported earnings for rehabilitation closures, more consumers using public transportation, increased visibility of consumers out and about in the community, students teach other students, increased teamwork with consumer organizations, significant staff attendance at local and national consumer conventions, and upon hire, all new staff go through extensive training at the center alongside the other New Visions students. New Visions has changed Ho'opono in profound ways. It is changing and will continue to change what it means to be blind and living in Hawaii. As Dr. James Omvig states in his writings, proper training equates freedom. He knows this because of his own personal story. New Visions and Ho'opono are attached, and with each passing day, are more and more entwined. In the years to come, there will be hundreds, if not thousands, impacted by New Visions and Ho'opono, and they in turn will change attitudes that people have about blindness. Hawaii will be a different place, a better place for all. Mahalo. In writing this up, it is daunting to reflect upon the support and help given during the years that I served as administrator from April 1994 through 2009. Not all were included in the formal part of the history, and even for those that were, not enough was said about their contributions. What follows is an attempt to give at least some of the recognition that individuals and organizations deserve. Joanne Kimura was one such person. No one ever worked harder, and for sure, no one worked longer than Joanne did for Ho'opono. She served for over 42 years, working alongside five different administrators. She provided the continuity and historical perspective the agency needed. She was also one to prod for the program to keep improving, to keep trying to do more, to keep trying to get better. Her life's work was Ho'opono, and for all of us who worked with her, and for those who followed, a debt of gratitude is owed. all of the previous Ho'opono administrators did great work. Those that served the program since its move to Bachelet Street included Dr. Elizabeth Morrison, Bia Huguchi, Jane Egge, and Jan Tavares. As a side note, Bea and Jane joined the board of the Friends of Ho'opono upon retirement, and Jane is still that nonprofit's treasurer. Shout out to the branch staff that worked at Ho'opono during the years 1994 through 2009. Instructors, counselors, supervisors, administrative support, social service assistants, vending personnel, medical consultants, and low-vision clinic optometrists all deserve recognition. Thanks to former mobility instructor Michael Hughes for coining the word New Visions. Branch secretary since early 2004 until near the end of 2009, Jerry Matomi had a vital role, and her expertise was invaluable as to numerous travel arrangements for staff and consultants, acquisition of supplies and resources, contract development, and a host of other duties that needed to be done. It is fortunate for the agency that Jerry was able to return in 2012. To the rehabilitation counselors and their supervisors and administrators, and those on Oahu as well as neighbor islands whose referrals sustained the New Visions program from 2002 through the present. Without their belief in the program, they would not have been able to encourage those on their caseloads to receive training. Acting VR administrator from 2004 to 2006, John Noland. John gave the green light for youth outdoor programming, for the special training afforded DAG Susan Kern, for emergency funding of Newsline, for okaying the funds for InterWorks Structured Discovery Training Coordination, for backing the continuing of New Visions when it faced its biggest challenge during the legislative hearings of 2004. VR administrator Neil Shim. Neil never wavered in his support of Ho'opono and fully supported several position reclassifications, which triggered reorganizations and extra work for his office. Neil gave the okay to use special federal funds for capital improvement projects. He believed that New Visions was the best hope for blind citizens, and he stated such in a memo to his successor when he retired. New Visions and its spin-off programs could not have happened without Neil's support. VR administrator Joe Cordova. Joe started in early 2006. He was well known to the blind vendors as a figure of honesty, integrity, and knowledge for his work with RSA, and relations with HSBCV improved greatly, thanks in large part to his efforts. Joe ensured that New Visions continued and that the InterWorks training project would carry on through its completion. Joe fully backed the acquisition of apartment units. In the face of severe budget cuts, he fought for the branch residential capacity not to be lost. Ho'opono is fortunate that Joe arrived when he did. Assistant VR Administrator Susan Ford. Susan backed capital improvements for the branch. She proved to be an effective representative to the legislature to get the work done so bonds could be approved for necessary items such as a functional fire alarm system and adequate roofing. She is an advocate for New Visions and believes, as others do, that Ho'opono is on its way to becoming an exemplary facility, not only for Hawaii residents, but for those whom reside throughout the Pacific region. As the supervisor of the agency staff specialists, she ensured that appropriate budget, IT, and other support was provided. Capital improvement projects, position changes, and reorganizations required the expertise of the staff services. Lorna Galano, M.J. Andres, Jerry Matomi, Iris Ching, Janet Masuko Kajimoto, Kat Fujimoto, and several others worked diligently to ensure that necessary work got done for the BEP program during an extended period of severe staff shortage. The Attorney General's Office, with much appreciation for DAG Susan Kern. Susan guided agency efforts to make active participation a cornerstone of the program. New Visions consultants and trainers. Fred Schroeder, the former Rehabilitation Services Commissioner and State VR Director's involvement with New Visions was key to getting change effort approvals. Al Harris, larger than life, he made me believe. Sandy Tigges, she pushed for and obtained the no turning back commitment to start New Visions. Eddie Bell developed and evaluated the InterWorks project. Doug Boone delivered the best experiential training possible, and his wife Christine was instrumental as well. The staff of the Iowa Department for the Blind, Louisiana Center for the Blind, Minneapolis, Inc., and the Colorado Center for the Blind. In addition to those mentioned, there were numerous other blindness rehabilitation professionals from across the land that freely gave much welcomed advice, recommendations, and encouragement. All those involved in making the resident component a reality. So many staff had key roles. Support personnel processed necessary purchases, and instructional staff ensured that students used their skills to navigate to and from the center and while at their apartments. Frequent apartment cleanliness inspections conducted by Debbie Gabe and other instructors would have pleased many a drill sergeant. Special thanks to Shelford Cantan, Jr., for serving as the first on-site manager and handling a myriad of issues. SBB staff, volunteers, contributors, and organizations that made the camps and other youth experiences from 2004 and on possible. Alan, Gordon, Gavin, Lynette, Bridget, Michael, Gavin, Sam, Steve, Leah, John, Katie, Brooke, Shelford, Dean, Debbie, Carol, Glenn, Roxanne, Virgil, Sherry, Stan, Annette, Russ, Maureen, Carl, Kat, Deborah, Donald, Marianne, MJ, Lorna, Jerry, Janet, Finia, Joseph, Maureen, Chris Boone, the Weinberg Foundation, Blind Vendors Ohana, HAB, NFBH, the Friends of Ho'opono, Carol Kai, Ranger Ron, and several other contributors. The Friends of Ho'opono, its president Ann Ito, and all the other long-standing board members. The nonprofit provides much-needed monetary assistance for program and building expenses. Valuable training experiences and advice provided by the National Executive Leadership Institute of the University of Oklahoma and Director Owen Pollard, Mississippi State University's Rehabilitation Research Institute, and directors Dr. Elton Moore and Dr. Brenda Cavanaugh, Interworks Institute of San Diego State University, and director Dr. Fred McFarland, the National Council of State Agencies for the Blind. Its members from across the land were colleagues, mentors, and friends. The Rehabilitation Services Administration Office out of Washington, D.C., former commissioners and staff specialists. President Nanny Fife, Officer Katie Keim, and members of the Hawaii affiliate of the National Federation of the Blind. Presidents Philo II, Warren Toyama, Miles Tamashiro, and members of the Hawaii Association of the Blind. The Ho'opono Advisory Board has provided support, advice, encouragement for decades. The local library for the blind and physically handicapped, and directors Fusako Miyashiro and Sue Sugimura. LBPH has always provided exceptional transcription and other vital services. Ho'opono staff families. They put up with a lot of extra hours on the part of their family member, and several contribute time and food to agency special events. The Oahu Contractors Association built the new kitchen facility. Special recognition to Wally Miura for coordinating that and several other building improvements. The Delta Gammas, led by Nancy Varner, have served faithfully on the advisory board, held fundraisers for the new kitchens, provided Dale Carnegie training for speaking adverse administrator. Their support never stops. Lions Clubs. The Ho'opono land and building construction was made possible through their efforts, and their contributions have continued on through the years. State Senator Suzanne Chun Oakland has done more for the agency than many of us will ever know. State Representative Corrine Ching has been a staunch supporter of the program. Hawaii State Committee of Blind Vendors and its Board of Elected Officers. BEP consultants and trainers, including Catrioana McDonald and Terry Smith. UH Kokua and its director, Ann Ito. Hui O VIP, the Holo Holo Club, Haha Menalima. Ho'opono supervisor since 2000 and administrator since 2010, Ms. Leah Gruppen, With a touch of genius, power, and magic, she and the Ho'opono staff did whatever they could do to champion progress and strengthen hope. They walked in grace. End of The Ho'opono Story by David Eveland, spelled D-A-V-I-D-E-V-E-L-A-N-D, read by Tom Hudson, Clive, Iowa, in May 2013, in the studio of the Iowa Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, Des Moines, Iowa. Published by Ho'opono Hawaii Services for the Blind, 1901 Bachelet Street, Honolulu, Hawaii, 96813.